Hello and welcome to At the Letters for June 19th, 2024. Ben Nicholson-Smith here with you, along with Arden Zwelling, on this episode of ATL, produced by Christian Ryan and Nick Onfrod. Thanks for tuning in here as we discuss the Blue Jays approaching the midway point of the season. And Arden, at some point, they've got to get to 500.
Are you sure this is ATL for June 19th, or is it for June 12th, or like May 22nd? Right. April 24th, it feels like we've been saying exactly what you just said for literally months now.
Right, and like you can't just keep playing and staying three games under and getting, hey, we're almost there, this is the night, we think we can do it, and you know the vibes are kind of improving, we're not that far out of the race. At a certain point, you actually just have to get to 500, and that is a lot easier when you can hit home runs. It's a lot easier when you have a functional bullpen. For the Blue Jays, those are two areas that continue to be problematic for them.
Yeah, and it's hard to watch when they're blowing late leads. The Blue Jays have blown a lead in 14 of their losses this season. They've allowed the second most runs in the eighth and ninth innings to the Rockies. The Rockies have allowed 107, which is just the most runs, but the Blue Jays are in second with 74. So it's also just like the context of these losses as well.
Absolutely. The team itself continues to evolve in front of us here. Bo Bichette on the injured list, Aurelvis Martinez on the major league roster, Jimmy Garcia now on the injured list, but Yuriel Rodriguez appears poised to come back at some point this weekend. So some moving pieces that we'll discuss in the course of this week's episode here. So I'll throw a couple ideas at you here. They've already moved in the direction of playing some of their prominent players less, including Alejandro Kirk. He's essentially playing one out of every three games, kind of in a backup catcher role at this point. George Springer, I mean, to me, this is someone we've talked about this extensively. George Springer now, I think, is a guy who can play 4 days a week for this team. And I'm not forecasting that the Blue Jays are going to have him on the bench three times a week. I think that John Schneider's probably going to continue to play him more like five, maybe 6 days a week. But to me, there's no need to have George Springer out there more than four times a week.
Yeah, I think four out of every six games makes sense for Springer, and I think it is slowly, progressively moving in that direction. You got to have somebody who is, deserving of playing time in his spot. There isn't anybody really that's like jumping up and down and really like that you can't take out of the lineup. Like, it's kind of the story of the Blue Jays offense for the entire season. They've never had five, six guys all going at once. It's always just been two guys or three guys going at once. But yeah, certainly George Springer has not been going at any point this season. So you just look at the results, not only this year, but dating back to last year. Yeah, it's I agree with you.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where because he has three more years on the contract, they're in this with George Springer right now. So they need to try to find solutions. You know, even if you look ahead to next spring, you have to work with him. You have to try to get him back on track, kind of medium term and long term here. But short term, he's giving the Blue Jays no indication that he is about to break out. If you look at the advanced numbers, the barrel rate, the isolated power, his numbers against fastballs, the exit velocities, all of this points to a player in decline and in steep decline at that. So like you said, it would be a lot easier if Addison Barger had come up and hit two home runs in his first week in the against major league pitching. Just hasn't happened. He's not really looking like someone who's on the brink of being a major league regular himself. But I think it's worth giving Barger some chances, getting Aurelvis Martinez in there periodically, and just seeing if there are ways to get one of these young hitters heating up and having someone take over that lineup spot. Because Springer at this point is just not a guy who's looking like a major league caliber regular.
Sure. You're at the point where you got to throw whatever you have at the wall and you got to fire every last bullet that you can, because if the Blue Jays don't get out on a 7-3, an 8-2, a 9-1 stretch here at some point, it's going to be too little too late if they do get to that in late July. So you just look at the last 14 days, the Blue Jays have four players with a WRC plus above 100. So they have four players who are above league average offensively. One of them is Addison Barger, who has made 11 plate appearances.
And a line drive base hit into right center. Springer is getting the wave. The throw is cut on the infield. Springer will score. RBI single for Barger, and it is...
The other three are Spencer Horowitz, Ernie Clement, and Justin Turner. So Justin Turner's playing pretty regularly. Ernie Clement, he's been hot lately, and he's been rewarded for it. He's playing pretty regularly. He's started 5 of the last 6, and Spencer Horowitz has started 4 of the last 6. So the players who are performing well offensively are in there. The problem is they're just like, obviously George Springer is not having a good season offensively, but he is not alone in that regard on this team.
Right. And you could say that about Kevin Kiermaier too. Not that he was expected to provide a ton of offense, but certainly has been expected to provide more than he actually has with a 544 OPS. We've seen that with Kiermaier too, where Kiermaier essentially is a fourth outfielder at this point on this team. He is not getting starts on a regular basis, more of a defensive replacement. And I would expect that to continue because the quality of his at-bats, candidly, has just not been very good either. So once you have Kiermaier in this part-time role, you have Kirk in this part-time role. Turner, like you said, has been better in June and especially lately with a home run against the Red Sox the other day. So, you know, you can get Turner in there and Clement in there. Clearly, there's opportunity for players who do hit. It's just that the depth of this offensive position player core does not really seem to be there. And that's always going to be the case when you have guys like Bichette and Springer underperforming to the degree that they are.
Yeah, I think the Blue Jays have done the things that they can do. Like, to your point, we've seen the playing time behind the plate go basically 65% Danny Jansen and 35% Alejandro Kirk. That's in spite of the fact that over the last 30 days, Danny Jansen's hitting 195 with a 586 OPS. There's nobody who is pushing for playing time right now. There's nobody who is undeniable other than Ernie Clement over the last 7 to 8 days, whatever this crazy heater is that he's been on.
He's put himself in scoring position for Ernie Clement, who sends it to deep left and gone. On the first pitch that he sees, Ernie Clement launches a 2-run homer. And get a load of this. He is now 5 for his last 5 with 3 doubles and a homer, going back over 3 games.
Keep this kid in the lineup, Ernie Clement.
Credit to the Blue Jays for sticking with Ernie Clement when they were DFAing other players, right? Like when Kevin Biggio was DFA'd and Daniel Vogelbach was DFA'd at both those junctures. I'm sure there's some people who thought that Ernie Clement could have been the guy who went there. And Ernie Clement has rewarded their faith. But Ernie Clement is like your 8-9 hitter on days that he's in the lineup. He's not somebody who's driving your offense. So that's very much a nice to have. But it's not somebody who's going to be propelling this team to 5 or 6 runs a game.
Yeah, exactly. He's on a good team. He's an 8-hitter. He's a 9-hitter. He's a bench player. And he's on this great streak right now. Kind of a hilarious offensive player, like a truly unique offensive profile. When you look at a guy who almost literally never walks, but also basically does not strike out either. He has 9 strikeouts all season long. I mean, that's a 3-game series for some guys. So Ernie Clement puts the bat on the ball. He's going to make things happen. He'll swing a pitches off the plate and hit them. He'll swing a pitches over the plate and make some good contact. So like you said, he's a guy who's obviously going to be playing, especially at a time that Bo Bichette is on the sidelines. So he's in there. Am I missing anything offensively here? Because to me, like I said, I would dial back the playing time on Springer, especially if someone like Barger or Martinez starts producing and you find ways to get those guys in the lineup, even at Springer's expense. But am I missing something else here? Is there another card to play, or are the Blue Jays kind of out of moves at this point?
No, that's my point. They've done what they can do. Like they've fired the bullets. Like it's here now. Short of playing Aurelvis Martinez every day, I don't know what else they could do that would be more dramatic than what they've done already. Like they've responded to the short term results. Like the immediate stimulus has been reacted to. They just don't, like, it's that simple, Ben. They just don't have enough players performing really, really well offensively to score as many runs as they're going to need to win more often than not.
Right. And we could have a debate over, you know, to what extent is that on the players? To what extent is that on Ross Atkins? I mean, you look at the changes that they made this going into this season. There were big bets on internal players to bounce back, guys like Kirk and Springer and Bichette, who have, or not Bichette as much, but Kirk and Springer and Vlad Guerrero Jr., Varsho, to bounce back offensively. That has really not happened in a couple prominent cases. And so I think it's very fair to question whether making Don Mattingly the offensive coordinator was the move for the Blue Jays. It's also fair to look at the offseason additions that they did make, guys like Kiermaier and Justin Turner, and to say, hey, was this the right path to choose? Because at this point, the results do speak for themselves. And we're talking about a team right now that consistently does not score enough runs to overcome other mistakes or other weaknesses on the roster.
Yeah, it's multifactorial like anything is. It's an offseason when not enough was done to add offense to this roster. It's an in-season when core players haven't had the rebound seasons that they were expected to, or haven't taken the steps forward that they were expected to. In many cases, have taken steps back and have actually performed worse than the quote-unquote down years that they had in 2023. It's accelerated decline from George Springer. It's Kevin Kiermaier not being able to replicate the season that he had last year. It's a lack of high impact upward pressure from the minors, a lack of like real developmental success stories. It's probably partially some coaching, game planning, strategy, preparation. Like, it's very hard to get a handle on those things because we're not in there. We're not in those meetings, in those sessions, so we don't really see all the mechanics and gears of how that works. So it's hard to like really criticize it, but it could certainly be playing a factor. It's probably partially luck. Honestly, it's partially just the outcomes of baseball not going the Blue Jays' way. I'm not saying that's everything. That's just one of the like dozen different factors that are leading into the Blue Jays being one of the worst offensive teams in baseball this season.
So as we look at this team kind of big picture here, they're 5.5 games out of the wild card race as we record this on June the 19th. Now, to me, this is still a situation where you play it out because you are a really good week away from being maybe a game out. Maybe you're a couple games, over 500 as opposed to under 500. This team has not shown a lot of signs of putting together a 7-0 week, but it's possible, and weird things happen in baseball, and there's no point in trying to sell everything right now. So my expectation is they continue to just play this thing out for another month and see where things are, end of July after the All-Star break. But it's continuing to trend in the wrong direction. And if you look at their playoff odds right now, this is a baseball team that has the same record as the Cincinnati Reds and the Pittsburgh Pirates, and their playoff odds are in that same range too. So it is trending in the direction of sell.
Yeah, they need an 8-2 run, or 7-3, or 9-1, or gasp 10-0. Like, they just need to get out on a run here to meaningfully change their possibility of qualifying for the postseason. Like, the one thing working in their favor is that all the other teams around them are performing rather poorly as well. Obviously, the Red Sox are playing well at the expense of the Blue Jays right now. We're two games into that Red Sox-Blue Jays series, and the Red Sox have taken the first two. We'll see what happens on Wednesday night. It's Wednesday morning as we record this. So the Red Sox are playing well, but the Royals are 3-7 in their last 10. The Tigers are 3-7 in their last 10. The Tampa Bay Rays are 3-7 in their last 10. The Blue Jays are actually performing better than those three clubs in their last 10. The Blue Jays are 5-5 in their last 10. The Astros also 5-5. The Rangers 3-7. They've lost 5 in a row. So everybody around the Blue Jays in this race for the third wild card spot, other than the Red Sox, is performing as poorly as the Blue Jays, if not worse than them. So that's what's keeping Toronto in this mix and keeping them from dropping like an anvil to the bottom of the AL wildcard standings. But the thing is, you've got these like 6-7 teams all competing for one wildcard spot.
if we assume that the top wild card is going to go to either the Yankees or Orioles, whoever doesn't win the AL East, and we assume that the second wild card is likely to go to Cleveland or Minnesota, whoever doesn't win the Central. So you've got like just one wild card spot up for grabs and six or seven teams that are all kind of mid and competing for it, and only one of those teams can qualify for it. So it isn't just how close the Blue Jays are to that third wildcard spot. It's how many other teams are around them within striking distance of it. And just the very zero sum nature of one team's going to get it and six other teams are not.
Right. And, you know, you look at some of those teams hovering around this wildcard race, and even a team like the Rangers that's now seven games under 500, at least Texas has DeGrom and Scherzer and Malley and Cody Bradford all coming back. So you can kind of look at them and say, all right, like there are some real additions coming. And for the Blue Jays last year, that was Chad Green and Hyunjin Ryu. For a while, it was even, hey, they have prospects in the minor leagues. At this point, this kind of is the team. And so we'll see. I mean, there's still opportunity here because it's such a long season. And if they get to a couple games over 500 by the All-Star break, they're sort of in a much different spot. The challenge is you actually have to do that work. And you're about to face the Guardians, the Red Sox, the Yankees. You're facing good teams. It is a tough league. They have to make those gains. And so there's, I don't know. I feel like watching this team, it's like they've hit this plateau in the last couple of weeks where it's like they're just permanently two games under 500, and there's danger in staying there. You have to overcome that. You have to take that step forward at a certain point.
Yeah, they used that stretch against the White Sox and the Pirates and the A's to get out of that like six or seven games under 500 spot that they were at in kind of mid to late May. And now they've gone to this two games under 500 spot where they've been hanging around. And look, they're going to play here on Wednesday night to split the homestand. If they lose that game, they go 2-4 on the homestand, which is really bad. If you split the homestand, that's just okay. That's still not the outcome that you need. And then they're going to go on the road through Cleveland and Boston, and like a 3-3 trip through Cleveland and Boston, just considering the quality of competition and where those games are being played, that's a fine outcome, but it's not going to be good enough for the Blue Jays to get where they want to go. Like, they need to get on a run where they are winning substantially more than they're losing. I know that sounds like the most basic, simple, like, yeah, thing to say, but that's really all there is to it right now. And as long as the Blue Jays keep doing this two steps forward, two steps back thing, they're not going to get where they're trying to go this season.
And it's not a fun team to watch. Hasn't been for some time. What do you think it would take for this team to seem more fun? Is it just winning? Like, is there something else? Usually when teams win, they are more fun.
Yeah, it would take like the young guys all showing up and like having these crazy Davis Schneider arcs all at once. You know, like when Davis Schneider first came up in 23 and went on that crazy tear. If the Blue Jays got that from Horwitz, Barger, Martinez all at once, I think that would make the team fun. I think it's unrealistic that that happens, but I do think that is what would make the team fun.
Yeah, I think if a couple of those guys go off and or if Vladdy starts hitting homers, then that would make the team fun. I mean, it's not to say Vlad isn't having a good season. I think he is having a good season. I think he's fully deserving of being an All-Star this year. And you look at first baseman in the American League, he's objectively the best or one of the best.
Whoa, what a catch by Guerrero, taking extra bases away from Andrés Giménez.
The first task is putting your defenders in the right positions. The second task is to flash the leather, and Vladdy was ready here.
It's not to say that he's not having a good year, but I think that the fun level on this team would be way different if he was on a 40 homer pace, which, you know, should be within the realm of what he's capable of, just given that he has done that before at the highest level. So I think that would push things forward. And I agree, if you have the young guys taking big steps to emerge as legit contributors, then that would make this team more fun as well.
Home runs are definitely fun. People love home runs. It's the best thing that you can do when you're at the plate. The Blue Jays have played 17 games this month in June. They have hit 10 home runs in those 17 right. games. That's a big reason why it's not really fun to watch, is because the Blue Jays are not hitting many home runs. The Blue Jays are tied for the most games in baseball without a home run this season, 32. They've played 74 games, and in 32 of them, they have not hit a home run. Like, that is why it's not fun. Because 44% of the time, when you watch the Blue Jays, you are not seeing a home run hit.
Yeah. To go back to the offseason, you look at, you're signing a 39-year-old Justin Turner, you're signing IKF, and you're signing Kiermaier. There was not a lot of home run power in that offseason slate of moves. And, you know, certainly there was reason to believe that George Springer would be better than he's been so far. And his underperformance is a little puzzling to the, you know, that it's dropped off so steeply and his decline has been so swift. But you look at that combination of players, Turner, IKF, and Kiermaier, it doesn't scream home run.
Yeah, you blow a lot of leads, you don't hit a lot of home runs, and you have a very leaky bullpen. Not a fun time for a fan.
That's for sure. All right, well, we will step away and discuss some further developments with this team, including that bullpen, including Aurelvis Martinez as he arrives in the major leagues, and what the absence of Bobichet means for this team when we continue on At the Letters. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. All right, we're back on At the Letters, discussing those 35 and 38 Blue Jays through various lenses here. And, you know, Arden, earlier in the first half, I said that the Jays are trending toward selling. And I want to kind of revise that, because they're trending toward a team that's probably should sell if they continue at this current clip. Obviously, under 500, you never make the playoffs. So that's something that they have to be considering. At the same time, I think if they stay a couple games below 500, they're not selling. I think that if they get to the deadline, July 30th, July 29th, 28th, and they are just in this same sort of zone, I think they want to win, obviously. This is a front office that's invested a ton into this season. They want to hold on to the hope that they can be relevant. So I think they are going to err on the side of hold or slight buy or buy-sell combo. And if they're a couple games under, I just don't see them flipping Kikuchi and flipping Garcia and pulling that plug.
What would the playoff odds have to be, do you think, for the Jays to do that?
So for me, I would say that if it's under 10%, you should trade away Jimmy Garcia and Yusei Kikuchi. That would be my thought. If I'm predicting what this Toronto Blue Jays front office will do, I think it would have to be under 7.5%. What do you think?
Under 7.5%. So if they're, like, right now they're at 13, and you think they would buy at 13?
I think they would hold. I think they would hold and maybe tinker. You know, maybe you trade, like, for example, Kevin Kiermaier, right? He's not playing. They could trade Kevin Kiermaier to someone who wants a defensive specialist. Maybe you're getting, you know, a single A reliever back in that deal. And then maybe you make, like, a, you know, on the edges of the roster bullpen addition, you tell everyone you're a buyer. Like, that's the kind of, you know, you talk about how much you believe in the group internally, and, you know, everyone knows it's essentially the same roster. Like, if they are two games under, that's the kind of deadline I would see.
It's very hard to do both. I know, like, teams have tried. It's very difficult to pull that off. You need the right market and the right opportunities. I think that, if anything, just how the market shapes up will inform that a lot. And as you're seeing it right now, it looks like there's going to be a real lack of sellers, and particularly yes, sellers with appealing inventory. Because, you know, like, what, you know, the Oaklands and White Sox and Marlins and Rockies of this world, like, there's just not that many players there that teams are going to want to trade for, because if those teams had really good players, they'd probably be performing a lot better. So yeah, you'll have, like, your Crochets and your Mason Millers, but, like, the Blue Jays would have some very attractive pieces, and they would potentially have market conditions in which they have a ton of bidders for those pieces because of the relative lack of sellers and the amount of buyers who feel that they are still within striking distance of the playoffs, because there's that third wildcard spot that keeps a lot more teams competitive later into the season. So if the Blue Jays are still 2-3 games under 500 and their playoff odds are like 10 to 12% in the double digits, but low double digits, I think it would be hard for them not to take advantage of that situation and accept reality and what this season is going to be and just make the prudent decision for the future of the franchise and sell.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's where you get into the borderline, right? It really is around that 10% mark, a little above it, a little below it. I think if it's 20%, you know, it's pretty clear you want to roll that dice and you want to see what can happen. But if it is around 10, 12%, you also have to assess just like what's happening and how it is that you're getting there. And if they are playing the way they are now, then that to me would be a yellow flag. Like, this team right now is not playing good baseball. They don't appear to have enough good players. So that would be a reason to, you know, adjust course. But again, this front office obviously is the literal group that acquired all these players. They believe in these players. The coaching staff is not going to want to give up on this 2024 season. So it's going to be an interesting push-pull. Ultimately, there's a lot at stake because not only is this team this year, you know, underperforming, but I'm also kind of starting to have some doubts about 2025 and how good is this team in 2025 and beyond. So if you decide you really want to hold on, you really want to reset for next year, I like that idea. And I hate the idea of giving up on a season that is yet to happen when you have some good players. It just feels so non-competitive to me. But I got to say, I'm not totally convinced that this core for 2025 is looking all that good.
A lot of that will depend on whether they can get more power out of Guerrero, whether Bo Bichette can bounce back to career norms, whether Dalton Varsho can continue playing the way that he has been, whether Spencer Horowitz, Addison Barger, Davis Schneider can just be like that sort of 10% above league average type of guys around the margins, even throw Ernie Clement in there as well. Like, if you're getting that, then you should be able to fill in the gaps, I think, with veterans on short-term deals. And then the other side, obviously, is you're going to need to improve your bullpen a lot, and you're going to need your starting pitching to remain like as good as it has been. And there's a lot of question marks there. So I wouldn't be as out on 2025 as it sounds like you are. For the rest of 24, like, you get to the trade deadline on July 31st. That is what the Blue Jays that day, they will be in Baltimore and they will be playing the 110th game of their season. So they will have 52 games remaining. And so if they are, what, two games below 500 at that point, like, so it took 89 wins last year to get the third wild card spot. Let's say it takes only like 86 this year.
Sure.
86 and 76. So you got to be 10 games above 500 on the season to just sneak into that third wild card spot. If the Blue Jays are two games below 500 on deadline day with 52 games remaining, they have to play 12 games above 500 the rest of the way over the final 52. So they have to go 32 and 20 over the final 52. So it really would be incumbent on your belief that that group, that team, whoever's hurt, whoever's healthy, whoever's performing, whoever's underwhelming, etc., can play 12 games above 500, 32 and 20 the rest of the way from the beginning of August on. And so then you could say, yeah, don't sell, hold, slight buy, whatever. We're going to go for this thing. We're going to sneak into the third wildcard spot. But it's got to be hard to get there, Ben, that they could play 12 games above 500 over the final 2 months.
Yeah, you know what? And so, obviously, you're going to read the standings around you. You're going to get a sense of what the other teams are doing. And if it remains as clustered around 500 as things are, that opens the door to a hold. That opens the door to a slight buy, even if you're below 500. But man, when you look at those numbers, this is flipping me to the other side. If you're even, it is though, if you're even one game below 500 at that point, if you're 54 and 56, 54 and 55, something like that, when the deadline comes around on July 30th, that is a lot to put on the team. So I think you've got to be willing to trade those guys. At the same time though, I don't think it's something the Blue Jays front office wants to do. So I think they are going to hold on until the last possible minute before selling. Again, I'm not saying that's the right decision. I'm just predicting that they are going to be loath to sell.
I don't think it's anything. It's not something any front office wants to do. Like, you know this as well as anyone, that like, these are incredibly competitive individuals and these are people who want to win desperately. Like, I think back to last trade deadline when the Angels bought And it's a weird situation, right? It's not a direct comparable because they had obviously Shohei Ohtani and they had to take one last run with him. But like at the deadline, they were like, I don't know, 4 or 5 games above 500, somewhere in that range. And it ended up going disastrously. We all saw what happened over the final 2 months as they lost a bunch of games after buying at the deadline, ended up putting like their entire team on waivers and just what a calamity that became. Yeah, they were 56-51 at the deadline last year when they bought. And everybody was like, wow, the Angels are going for it. Can you believe this? And we all saw how that turned out. So like that's the bad outcome there, right? Like that's the risk that you are opening yourself up to. And perhaps like just with the evidence you've seen from the team over the first three and a half, four months, and just with obviously the conditions of the league around you, maybe it's the likely outcome as well, right? Like, would you agree? Like, if the Blue Jays are 2 games under 500 at the deadline, they hold or they buy, that's a low percentage gamble you are taking, is it not?
Yeah. Well, so, if they're 2 under, I don't forecast like a actual buy, but it could be a, like I said, you trade Kiermaier somewhere, you acquire some reliever that's pushed off the roster of another team. You know, that's the sort of hold situation that they could unfold. I don't think that they would do something as large scale as what the Angels did last year if they are indeed at or under 500. But yeah, it all kind of reinforces there is a lot of work to do in the next 6 weeks because you have to arrive at the deadline probably a couple games over to realistically have a shot of finishing even with 86 wins.
And then if you hold, there's the opportunity cost of not cashing in on a Kikuchi or a Garcia. We'll see where he's at that point. You know, if Turner has some value or Kiermaier has some value at that point, like I think that you need to take advantage of that opportunity as much as it'll sting, as much as it'll suck, right? And as much of a bitter pill as it will be to swallow, to admit this isn't going to be our year, I think the best thing for 25, 26, 27, 28, like the long-term sustainability of winning for this franchise would be to capitalize on getting back young players who have yet to make their MLB debut or ones who have just recently made their MLB debut who can help you in future years to take advantage of that opportunity. Like, I think that would be a mistake for the Blue Jays not to take advantage of that opportunity and to just let a Garcia, a Kikuchi, a whoever else is, you know, a Jansen, whoever else is on an expiring deal, just walk in free agency for at best a comp pick.
Right. Especially Jimmy Garcia and Danny Jansen, because those are players that you're not going to qualify in all likelihood. I mean, you could make a case to qualify Danny Jansen. I don't personally think that's going to happen. Certainly not going to qualify Jimmy Garcia. You probably should qualify Yusei Kikuchi at this point. So at that point, you're getting a pretty high draft pick back should he leave elsewhere in free agency. But with someone like a Jimmy Garcia, Danny Jansen, this would be your chance to get some real value in return. I think, based on, you know, my read on the fan base, I think fans would be happy to see this team sell. I think that people have given up on the season. It's been a bad year. It hasn't been fun. And the players don't appear to be that good. So I think that fans would actually be pretty happy to sell. And yeah, I think it would be a relief, honestly, for the fan base. But I'm just saying, I think the front office is going to hold on to the possibility of contending for as long as they possibly can. And I'm not saying that's an entirely bad thing. As long as you are willing to adjust and see the reality for what it is, if you get to July 30th and you have to go 32-20 to get into the playoffs, and the roster still looks to be as bereft of power as it currently does.
I think the sensible thing is that you work on multiple tracks through, this will be after the draft really, but like through late June and mid-July, even late July, right? Into the 20s of July, you work on multiple tracks, you assess the market, you see what's available, what's out there, what other teams are looking for, the prices they'd be willing to pay, the prices on other players that are available. Like, you really get a sense of the market in a holistic standpoint, and you understand how you could position yourself in it if you are buy, sell, or hold, or some combination of those things. And then come like July 29th, you make a call based on what your record is, how your team's been performing, what your roster makeup looks like, and honestly, more than anything, what your playoff odds are. What is your probability of this working out? Because if it's, even if it's 15%, Ben, like, that's still an 85% chance that it doesn't work out. And I think it would be a mistake at that point for the Blue Jays to hold.
Yeah. So what's your number, you think, for sell versus hold?
45-50.
Wow.
Yeah. It would have to be that high for me to consider it.
To
consider, you know, holding or soft buying. Yeah. It'd have to be that high.
Yeah. You know what? I think you're pulling me up with your argument here. I think it's a pretty sound argument. I think I'd say if there's a 30% chance, I'm fine to hold. If there's a 25% chance, I'm fine to hold. If it's under 20, it becomes tough.
What do you think the Astros should do? Because the Astros right now are 33-40, so they're 7 games below, but they have 30% playoff odds.
For any team, the answer for the next month is you play it out and you see.
Yeah.
And then you essentially make a decision in that last week before the deadline, because there's no real advantage to be gained by trying to decide on June 20th.
No, as we are right now, right, for the Blue Jays. Yeah. But like, because if you think the Astros should sell, then you have to think the Jays should sell.
Yeah. I mean, the Jays have a slightly better record, but, you know, there are a lot of different factors. Yeah, you're right. I think if you're 10, 15%, that is a long, long odds for this team to overcome. At that point, you probably have to sell. I think it's maybe if it gets to 20, 25%, I would be okay holding. And if it gets to 30, 40, 45, then I think you're justified in buying and trying to push. We'll see where the odds sit at that point. But that's probably a general way to look at it.
Maybe they should push back the trade deadline. Maybe they should push it to like the middle of August or late August. Maybe that make more sense in this, expanded postseason world.
You can make that case. I wouldn't necessarily oppose it. Let me ask you this: as far as some of the recent developments with the Blue Jays as they relate to the trade deadline. So Jimmy Garcia, he's on the injured list right now with a nerve issue in his right elbow that forced him out of a game on the weekend. Not good for the Jays. Not good, short term, medium term. And of course, Bo Bichette, who has been mentioned in all kinds of rumors, is also on the injured list as he deals with some calf soreness for the next 15 days or so, or a little less than that, actually, because it was a retroactive placement. So do either of those developments impact the way you view the Blue Jays ahead of the deadline?
No. I think that the Martinez-Bichette thing is like going to be a 6 days thing, right? Like Bo Bichette, by all reports, is going to be ready to come back at the end of his 10 days. So that's June 25th. We're here on June 19th on the Wednesday. And Aroldis Martinez, I honestly don't think would be here if Nathan Lucas was healthy. But unfortunately, he just had thumb surgery, so he's not. So the Blue Jays have brought up Aroldis Martinez, and maybe he'll get into like 3 games over the next 6 days, and you'll see how he does. And if he's absolutely undeniable, maybe you have to make a different decision when Bo Bichette's ready to come back, and maybe it's Addison Barger going down. If he's not showing you anything, and Aroldis Martinez is having like a Davis Schneider at Fenway Park arc. But yeah, I don't think that that maneuver in particular really is going to inform what the Blue Jays do at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think that actually having Martinez up here for a week or so is actually a positive for his development, even though he's not going to play on an everyday basis. It'll be a break from those kind of regular reps that he's been getting at AAA. But I actually think that for him to get exposed to the pressures of a major league season midway through a year, I actually think it's kind of a good thing. It's just like a little big league vacation, then go back down and continue getting those everyday reps. Developmentally, I mean, obviously the priority is winning games, so this is kind of secondary. But I think from a developmental standpoint, this is probably a good thing for him.
Sure, it can't hurt. I don't think that he's going to come out of this a ruined prospect or anything. Like, I just don't think it's going to be a very long appearance in the big leagues for him. It'll be interesting to see him get into games. It'll be interesting to see how he's pitched, how much spinning stuff he sees, whether pitchers challenge him with fastballs. It'll be interesting to see his swing decisions and his plate approach. If he gets into the field, it'll be interesting to see how the defense looks in the big leagues where everything moves a lot faster. But yeah, I don't think this next 5-6 games is going to have a real big say on his future or the Blue Jays' future.
And meanwhile, the Blue Jays look to be adding Yariel Rodriguez back to that big league rotation. Likely that he will start one of the games against Cleveland this weekend. And that hasn't been announced yet by the Blue Jays, but you see him around the team. He's been walking in from the bullpen with the other starting pitchers. They don't have to make a roster move yet, but it looks as though he will return and kind of end that brief period of time where they did not have a starting pitcher to round out the rotation there. So what are you expecting from Yuriel Rodriguez here as he returns to the rotation? And do you think that this is a medium-term thing as the Blue Jays kind of manage his innings, or what's the expectation there?
Yeah, I think medium-term makes sense. This is probably not a guy that's going to throw 110 pitches for you ever. If the Blue Jays can get 90 pitches out of him, and if he can be pitch efficient and get through a number of innings, that would be helpful to them. I think they're still going to need a rested bullpen behind him just because of the workload concerns, and because, like I said, it's not going to be a guy that's going to pitch you a Chris Bassett outing or a Kevin Gausman outing where it's like going back out for the seventh with 100 pitches. So he's going to need to throw strikes and attack and just kind of paper over that gap at the back of the Blue Jays rotation for a spell. But I think that Trevor Richards and Bowden Francis are likely still to have something to say in Yariel Rodriguez's starts. It's not going to be a true bullpen game, but it is going to be a game when you use your bullpen.
Yeah, a pitcher who's had some really good results, certainly has big league stuff. So we'll see if he's able to offer the Blue Jays, even if it's a five and dive situation for, you know, the next 6 weeks, something like that. Then you reassess, you see where he's at, and you can make the call as far as how to proceed. So will be interesting to watch because Rodriguez, I mean, this is becoming more and more clear, but he's an important long-term part of this team, you know, someone who was brought in on a five-year deal. And so what he offers here, especially if our lens shifts a little bit to 2025 and beyond, he's an important part of this team's starting pitching future.
Swing and a miss, strike three, up the ladder with the high fastball. 10 strikeouts in four innings for Yariel Rodriguez.
Yeah, and I still will forever be curious as to what he would look like in a high leverage role, the back end of a bullpen, because his stuff, I think, in shorter, higher intensity stints could be pretty electric if the fastball's playing up to the mid-90s and he's just refining the arsenal down to basically just a slider off of it. I think that could be pretty cool. And you mix in the mentality and the mound presence and just some of the I'm coming right after you-ness of him. That would be something I'd like to see at some point. But the Blue Jays, although they have needs at the back end of their bullpen, probably have a bigger need at the back end of their rotation right now. So that's where Yariel Rodriguez fits.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the back of their bullpen, I feel like, you know, we've already gone over enough flaws of this team and on this podcast, so I don't necessarily want to hammer it home ad nauseum. But yeah, the back of the bullpen, you know, Tim Mesa, we saw Brendan Little have a tough moment against Tyler O'Neill in the Tuesday game against the Red Sox. This bullpen right now has been stretched really thin. They do not have a ton of clear answers there leading up to Chad Green in that temporary closing role. The hope is that Jordan Romano can come back relatively quickly. So we'll see if that happens. But anything else on the bullpen, Arden, anything else just on this team in general before we step away? I mean, it's a team that's still just trying to play better brand of baseball than they have all season long. It's taken them a long time to get to where they are, and it's not a great place. But any other thoughts that we haven't touched on yet?
No, I agree with you. The back end of the bullpen has been decimated. You look at 2023, the Blue Jays leaders in terms of relief innings pitched. Trevor Richards threw the most, although there were like three starts in there as well, but 72 and two-thirds innings last year. So he's been good again and reliable again, someone you can count on.
So a 3-2 count on Soto. Swing and a miss. Got him on a changeup. And Richard strikes.
But from there, you go to Eric Swanson, 66 and two-thirds. He's been ineffective and is currently in the minors. Jimmy Garcia, 66 innings. He is currently injured with elbow neuritis, and we'll see when he's able to come back. Jordan Romano with 59 innings. He is now currently on the IL for the second time with an elbow issue. Tim Mesa with 53 and a third. He has also been ineffective, and the Blue Jays are just searching for the lowest of low leverage to use him in. So that is like four of your top five relievers from 2023 who are either hurt or ineffective and not trusted in leverage right now. That is a lot for any team to overcome.
Yeah, it's a tough spot to be. Also, you know, before we step away here, I know you watch a lot of non-Blue Jays. So let's do you have any non-Blue Jays storylines that you're actually enjoying watching? Because sometimes with this team, you know, it's a little bit of a rough year for them. not exactly a lot of great storylines on this team so far. But what about beyond the Jays? Is anything standing out to you that you're particularly enjoying or fascinated by?
I mean, I think that once we get to the meat of the postseason, it's going to be really, really cool because there are just some juggernauts in this league. The Dodgers, the Phillies, the Yankees, the Orioles. Then even like the second tier of teams. So you think about your Mariners or your Guardians, your Braves. There's just like a lot of really good teams, really loaded teams, teams that can do a lot of really exciting things, teams with really good starting pitching, teams with deep lineups, with a ton of power, and that run the bases a lot, and that defend really well. So I'm really looking forward to some of those October matchups between some of those clubs because there are just, you know, there's just some juggernauts in this league right now, and I'm looking forward to some of those 5 and 7 game series.
For sure. Okay, here's what I'll throw at you. I'll say Paul Skene's just incredibly so good. Obviously the velo, but the splinker that he throws is so good. Just the way he attacks hitters is so good. And, you know, here's a hot take for you. I think Paul Skene's is like no worse than the third pitcher in baseball, right? Third best pitcher in baseball right now. Like Skubal, I would say, is better. And you could, I know Wheeler had a tough start on the weekend. Like I'd be okay saying Zach Wheeler's a better pitcher than Paul Skene's, but Paul 100% should be an all-star. Zero doubt in my mind. He should be on the NL all-star team this year. And again, like I would say, yeah, I think he's just elite of the elite. I think that on talent, he is, yeah, third or fourth best starting pitcher in baseball.
Yeah, there's some good starting pitchers in baseball. There's a Corbin Burns comes to mind, a Tyler Glass now comes to mind. Shoto Imanaga has been electric. Really, really good. Great pickup for the Cubs. But yeah, I can't disagree that Skene's belongs up there.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll leave it there on that note with the Pirates All-Star Game hot take. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking with us all season. Thanks as well to our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade. For Arden Zwelling, this is Ben Nicholson-Smith, and you have been listening to At the Letters.